We got a good mystery speaker for you. He's been in the good fight for a long time, and he's still fighting. This morning when we had coffee with the Radio Ranch Wranglers, we talked about the fight that's in a badger. Badger's a cousin to a wolverine, but they never quit fighting until the last breath. This man hasn't quit fighting over all the years, and he is one, if you listen to our radio broadcasts, that he's been on the radio with us. And I would have to tell you that there was a man once that most of us have never heard about, Ezra Pound. At one time, he was a very renowned man. And the man you're going to hear tonight was mentored by Ezra Pound. Our mystery speaker, I want you to give him a hand. And I want you to give him assistance. Come on up now. Is Eustace Mullins. I want to tell you something, Eustace. I've never got that kind of greeting. Neither has Chris, right, Chris?
Yeah, lots of times.
Morning, Eustace.
Good morning.
You may be
seated. Morning.
Eustace Mullins.
I might add a little bit to the introduction, if you don't mind. This is actually 60 years. Last month, this is still May, isn't it? Last month in April 1949 is when Eustace met Ezra Pound for the first time. So 60 years he's been fighting this fight. His pens don't work too good anymore, but his mind is still clear, as you'll see very shortly. A question that's asked me, we've been all over the country, from Virginia several times, and Maine and Florida, out to Pocatello, Idaho a couple of times, and by Pastor Pete's place in Laramie and in Fort Collins. And people ask, everywhere we go, they ask me, is he a Christian? Well, he wrote a book, My Life in Christ, which could answer that very readily. Not very many people have seen that book or read it. Another book that he wrote, The Curse of Canaan, is scriptural, which is very few of his books have scripture in it, is the reason people ask that question. But The Curse of Canaan is written strictly from the scripture and begins with shortly after the flood and goes through the present. As a matter of fact, all of his works are really based on that. Jesus told the disciples and any disciples that would follow, you're going to do many greater things than I do because I go to my Father. So this is a great historian, and his greatness is not in himself but in the works that God has given him. We look at Christ and the works that Jesus did, and we think it's the feeding 5,000 men besides women and children, or healing the sick, or confounding the wise. And certainly those are things that he did, many miracles that he did. But the great works that he's talking about are turning over the tables of the Federal Reserve. I mean the money changers. And confounding the wise, or the lawyers, or the judges, and upsetting the physicians of the time, the pharmaceutical physicians. And that's exactly what Mr. Mullins has done for this past 60 years. He overturned the money table, money changers' tables in a greater way than Christ did. And that's what Christ was talking about. Greater things will you do. And he wrote the world order. The secrets of the Federal Reserve turned over their money changers' tables. And the world order confounded the wise. And Murder by Injection, those are three books that did exactly the great work that Christ was prophesying. So, is Eustace Mullins a Christian? You be the judge of that. So without further ado, you can get started with your... Oh, maybe we should read the title of your... let me read it off of yours. What I have learned over the years that you need to know and are not being told. Eustace Mullins.
Thank you for that introduction. I have had many great experiences in my life, all of which came as a surprise to me. And that's a very rewarding thing to happen. And I've traveled all over the world, and my best audiences have been in Germany and Japan. The most attentive and the most glad to hear my message. So, without further ado, I will introduce a strange name to you, the Kabbalah. The Kabbalah is something which affects us all, and we are rarely aware of existence. But the Kabbalah is a very pernicious organization which affects many of us in many more ways than we know. And that is the problem that we have, because this group has taken over our government and rules us now as a colony of a foreign country, the so-called Nation of Israel, which is also known as the Bandit State of Israel. And it's known all over the world by that name. And it has an effect on everybody.
They're not the true Israelites, are they?
They're not the true Israelites. They appropriated the name. And then one of my books, A Writ for Martyrs, I have a reproduction of a letter from the U.S. Tax Court. And it's signed by the senior judge. And it says, "You have no tax liability." And a lot of people would like to have a letter like that. But I went in alone with that lawyer and told them my story. And the senior judge of the U.S. Tax Court fully agreed with me and gave me this letter. So I print that letter in all my books now, to show what you can win if you go in and fight. But the one thing you should never do is to run or turn your back, because you're lost the minute you do that. And as long as you face the enemy, you have a chance. But never if you turn your back. So in all my travels and all my audiences, I find more and more appreciative people who like the work I have done. And so it's worthwhile to continue this fight. And my mentor, the poet Ezra Pound, objected to Franklin Delano Roosevelt's megalomaniac program for a Second World War. And because of that, Ezra Pound was placed in a mental institution, a lunatic asylum, and kept there for 15 years. And at that time, I was the only person who was willing to risk coming and visiting him. He was in Washington, D.C., and most people were afraid to go near him. Well, I didn't know any better. I went over there, and we made friends. And I visited him every day for 15 years. And he told me all the things I needed to know about the enemy. And it came from first hand. So I got it straight. And no one can really appreciate the life he was forced to live, surrounded by loon tips who rushed up and made faces at him all the time. And for a man of his sensibility, this was a great sacrifice. But he put up with it for 15 years. And I finally got him freed. I met an editor of the Washington Post in Washington, D.C. I took him to meet Ezra. And he was an old curmudgeon like Ezra himself. And so they hit it off wonderfully. So he began to visit every day. And he said, you know, he told Ezra, you know, there's something that can be done about your condition, and I'm the person to do it. Because he was the editor of the Washington Post, and he knew exactly who to go talk to. And so he went.
This was the editor of the Washington Post, and what was his name?
His name was Rex Herbert Lampen. He was an old newspaper family, and he had worked on almost all the papers in the United States. So he went to a congressman he knew, and this congressman was persuaded by him, and he got on the floor of Congress, and he said, why is the government holding its man? And the government never made an answer. They couldn't make an answer because there was no evidence of any kind against him. But he was charged with treason and aiding the enemy in wartime, which of course he had never done, and they had no evidence that he ever had. So the U.S. Department of Justice made a complete about face and dismissed all charges against him and gave up the pretense he was insane, because there was never the slightest indication that there was any problem at all. And he was out of that place in 2 days. And he got on the boat and went back to Italy and lived the rest of his life. So I was very happy that I was able to do this. I had no idea that it would ever happen. In all the years I'd visited him, we had a great relationship, and I got to do a lot of things for him. But the greatest thing that I did for him was to vindicate his entire life, because he had fought the criminal, insane bankers for years. The people who plot and start wars all over the world. And that was a great burden for everyone to carry.
He had some other protégés as well, some famous protégés.
Oh, he had some very famous protégés who all were awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature. And they were Ernest Hemingway and T.S. Eliot and James Joyce, and quite a few others, because he was always a teacher, and he was willing to show people the way.
Wasn't it all but one that received the Nobel Peace Prize for literature?
Oh,
all
yeah.
But one. Who was that one?
Oh, William Butler Yeats.
That one was Eustace Mullins is the only one that did.
Well, Ezra Pound himself never received or was mentioned for the Nobel Prize in his entire life.
He had four protégés that did take that honor.
He had four protégés. No other person had a record like that. But the Nobel Prize Committee, which was a very pro-communist, hated Ezra Pound, as many people did. But the person who hated him more than anyone else was a great communist named Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Was he a dictator?
He was a total dictator and a megalomaniac. He had to do his things his way or not at all.
He was actually a communist himself, wasn't he?
He was a lifelong communist.
Claiming democracy.
Oh, yes. Well, most of our congressmen and senators in Washington were admitted communists. And President Roosevelt himself had three personal assistants who were members of the KGB working for Stalin in Russia. And when I introduced Senator Joe McCarthy to the fact that Washington, D.C. was the world headquarters of international communism, had replaced Moscow in that role, well, it got him into a lot of trouble. And Joe became one of the most reviled persons in the United States to this day. If they mention him, it's always the evil monster, because he tried to protect the American people from communism, which was and is our greatest threat.
Is communism part of the Kabbalah?
Yes, it all comes from the Kabbalah. It's the capitalistic conspiracy and hatred of all people.
Capitalistic conspiracy, that's not communism, is it?
No.
But they work hand in hand.
Yes, they do work.
It's thesis and antithesis.
Yes, they're going down the same road. And Joe McCarthy was a great American. He was just a Wisconsin farm boy, and he came to Washington, and he fell into the hands of three of the most dangerous men in Washington. They were Jed Hoover, the head of the FBI, who had followed me in person for 33 years, and George Sikorsky, and Father Walsh, the head of the American Foreign Service Organization. And so with these three people, Joe was very quickly led astray. It took him a long time to get back on track again after that. But that's what can happen to you in Washington. If you don't have somebody with you to advise you, as I had Ezra Pound, you can lose a lot of time.
All of your works have been revealing the conspiracy, and they answered that with their title, The Conspiracy Theory, and like yours, they answered Joe McCarthy's great works with McCarthyism.
Oh, yes.
To poo-poo the whole idea and the works.
They invented McCarthyism, which is considered the greatest evil in the world today, and McCarthyism has never harmed a single American in the last 100 years, because he was trying to point out to the American people the danger of a communist. Their people are sworn to injure the American people in every way they can, and they never stop trying. So when I prepared this report here on the progress in communism in this country, the first name that came at me was the Kabbalah. And I realized the Kabbalah was behind all of this conspiracy and was promoting it, particularly with the U.S. government all over the world. And we fought two world wars to protect us with this conspiracy.
One of your books, The Curse of Canaan, goes through and describes the Kabbalah from its beginning all the way to today. Was that Nimrod's Babylon?
Yes, that goes right back to war.
It goes from the time that God confused the languages?
Oh, yes.
And that was the beginning of the Kabbalah with Nimrod and his wife, who was Semiramis.
Oh, yes. Nimrod created the whole thing and worked at it through the years.
That's also known as Mystery Babylon the Great, that the book of Revelation talks about.
Yeah, Mystery Babylon.
God says, come out of her, my people.
Yeah, And we still offer people that advice, because as long as you're in the grip of Babylon, you're going to have problems.
How did that Kabbalah get established in our nation over our governments?
Well, it permeated as an evil presence and established itself all over the country. And it worked tirelessly to promote communism in this country.
Was the Illuminati the beginning of it in this nation?
Oh, yes. In 1776, the Illuminati was organized by Adam Weishaupt.
Actually, May 1st, 1776, before our supposed birth date of July 4th.
Oh, yes. Well, actually, this country began at a date that most of you never heard of, and that is 1620. My ancestor, Eustace Clarence Mullins, landed...
Guillaume Mullins
landed on Indian Spring on Cape Cod in 1620. And he found a beautiful spring there.
They might enjoy a little more of the story if you back up to France when he was...
Yes, when he was living in France, he was informed that he and his family were to be executed because they were Huguenots.
He was an entrepreneur, and what was his business or his job?
He was the bootmaker for Louis XIV, the King of France.
And quite a wealthy man.
Oh yes, he had plenty of money because of his connection with the king. And he provided all his boots. And he had a nice home. And when he was informed that he had to get his family out of France or they'd be executed, he was able to buy the Mayflower and sail to the United States. And he arrived here in late December, which is a very bitter and cold period in New England, and they had a very rough time. And they all died within 18 days of the scurvy, because this country was a very harsh place to live at that time, because the Indians had managed to live here, but no one else. The English didn't come here, and the Spanish and the French, because the weather was too harsh.
And, so William Mullins, is the one that opened the way, or God opened the way for him to bring the Mayflower over here with the Pilgrims and the Huguenots. He was a Huguenot from France, right?
Yes.
And he escaped from France because he was on the outs with the religious factions there?
Oh, yes. They were known as dissenters, and Pilgrims, and Puritans.
And Huguenots.
And Huguenots.
French Huguenots.
And that was the foundation of this country, is these groups. These were small groups, and they had very little support, but they managed to get a foothold here, and they've been here ever since.
They actually started out with a smaller leaky boat, didn't they?
Yes. They started out with a small boat that was leaking at every beam.
What was the name of it?
The Speedwell.
The Speedwell.
And the Speedwell was about to go under. So they made it through here by the grace of God. And
that's the actual beginning of this nation, not July 4th, 1776. Birth date of...
It's well before
of the
July
4th. Government, right?
Yes.
Which is the Kabbalah.
The Kabbalah. That is the corporation which runs everything in this country.
A commercial corporation.
A commercial group of people who control everything. And the average American is entirely at their mercy, because they have the police power and they will use it against anybody. they control your employment and your home and all the aspects of your life.
They also create all the wars, don't they?
That is the principal job of our government, is to involve this country in more wars.
And the Kabbalah.
And the Kabbalah. The Kabbalah finances other wars. Just as President George Bush invaded Iraq, which had never fired a shot against this country, and killed a million of their people, and devastated our country. And our youth is still fighting over that today, with enormous casualties. And
did they create the Revolutionary War? Were they behind stirring up both sides of the Revolutionary War?
Well, they stirred up both sides, but they were not successful. And therefore, the spirit of revolution never got started in this country.
Was that really a war?
No, not a revolution. You had revolutions in England, you had revolutions in France, and you had revolutions in Spain. But we never had a revolution here.
It was more like a police action.
Yes.
Was there an end to this supposed war?
Not to the present day.
It wasn't really a war. It was you call it a cessation of hostilities?
Yes, a cessation of hostilities. And that's all it was. Because the armies stopped fighting and that was the end of it.
Was there any treaty signed or?
There was a Treaty of Paris signed in 1791. But not many people know about it or even understand what its terms are.
And that was the beginning of the First Bank of the United States here.
Yes, because England stopped the war, but only on conditions that the Crown would retain all the powers of this country.
And George Washington agreed to that.
Yes, he did.
He was actually an unwitting participant in the Kabbalah's plans.
Yes, he was, because unwittingly he closed the door to any further opposition in this country against the conspiracies of Great Britain.
So we really never won any freedoms. Is that from Britain? Is that true?
Oh no, we never fought a war for freedom, and we had an even worse war, the Civil War, which tore the country apart.
So who is really behind the whole Kabbalah system?
Well, the communist movement is actually behind it.
The bankers of the world.
Oh yes.
Primarily, the ones that we are aware of were the Rothschilds.
The Rothschild family was behind every war in which we have been engaged in the last 300 years.
300 years. So that dates really on back into England.
Oh, it does.
Weren't the banks of England, banks in England, not the Bank of England, under the Rothschilds, but weren't the banks in England and then they were thrown out?
Yes, they were expelled from the country.
And I think that was 1644, and then who allowed them back in England?
Oliver Cromwell, who was a supposed Puritan leader, and out of the blue, he came from Amsterdam and let them come back into England and renew their destructive works.
Wasn't it Charles I who Oliver Cromwell had beheaded?
Yes, the King of England, Charles I, was beheaded at the orders of Oliver Cromwell.
He's the one that got rid of the bank.
Oh, yes.
So they assassinate every king or every prime minister or every president who tries to interfere with their Kabbalah control.
Well, they never forget anything. They will come after you 300 years later. As long as they have a record of anything you've done, they will catch up to you and execute you. And we have people like Henry Kissinger and Alger Hiss in this country who work for them constantly. And Algiers himself created the United Nations, which was originally sponsored by President Woodrow Wilson, who came from my hometown in Sandton, Virginia. And he fought for the League of Nations all his life. He fought so hard that he had a paralytic stroke and was never able to do any more about it. And so the League of Nations died. And then when Roosevelt became a president, he renewed the fight for a new United Nations through Algiers. And Algiers was actually convicted as a traitor and sent to prison.
Who was responsible for Ezra Pound being incarcerated in St. Elizabeth's?
Well, Franklin D. Roosevelt learned from Stalin what to do to your enemies. He put them in an insane asylum.
If you couldn't try them for treason or any political crime.
No, Ezra Pound was never convicted of anything. I finally dropped all charges against him.
Stalin's ploy was if you can't convict someone, you just throw them in an insane asylum where you don't even have to make any charges.
Yeah, they were incarcerated, and anyone who talks to them thinks he's a madman, so they don't pay attention to him. And this was an ideal resolution for taking care of your enemies, and Stalin found it worked every time.
You mentioned Kissinger and Alger Hiss. Are all the presidents from George Washington to present president all established by the Kabbalah?
Yes, the Kabbalah influences their election.
And so they are puppet presidents.
They're puppets.
And they're not a president of the nation, they're president of the corporate government, business, right?
Yes. And the Civil War, which created such devastation on this country, they hired Abraham Lincoln for president by the Illinois Central Railroad, and he conducted the entire Civil War against the entire country. And the devastation ran from the Canadian border to Mexico because the bloodshed killed most of the active people left in the country. And the country never recovered. And that was entirely done by the Rothschilds. They paid for every bit of the expense. And they organized a Southern army, a Confederate army, throughout the South. They put off all the money. They paid for all the training and the weapons that they had.
So the Civil War was also orchestrated by the Kabbalah, by the bankers of England.
It was completely orchestrated by the Kabbalah.
Back to George Washington, if he was the first puppet president, there were other presidents of the Congress before him, I think eight, is that correct?
Yes, he was the ninth president.
So if he was a puppet president, who was his handler? Didn't the Kabbalah set up a handler for each president?
Oh, yes. Well, his handler was the person that he appointed the first treasurer of the United States. And that was
Alexander Hamilton?
Alexander Hamilton. And Alexander Hamilton was a poor bastard boy from the West Indies who came to Washington, and because Washington had a son, he more or less adopted Hamilton, and he became Washington's handler.
George Washington and Alexander Hamilton were the ones who allowed, like Cromwell, allowed the bank back in England. They allowed the first bank of, not known as the first bank, but the Bank of the United States in 1791. Is that correct?
That's correct.
2 years after George Washington became president of this corporation.
Oh, yes. That's correct. That was the date on that.
And they signed a 20-year...
charter.
20-year charter for the bank, which was up in 1911. What happened immediately after Thomas Jefferson did not want that to the charter to be re-upped, did he?
No, he did not.
And James Madison, who was his protege and peer, was the next president when that charter was up in 1811.
Yes. And the Bank of England promptly declared war against the United States again.
And what war was that?
That was the War of 1812.
So the War of 1812 was created by the bankers of England because James Madison would not re-up the charter.
Yes. And if you look in the history books, you'll find no cause listed for the War of 1812. Because they don't give you one. And that is because the American people were never told who caused the War of 1812.
But it was the same ones that caused the revolution, supposed Revolutionary War.
Oh, yes.
These are all police actions. They're not really wars, are they?
No, they're not wars. They're not even listed as wars. But they realize that something's going on in this country which they can't account for.
After the War of 1812, they did reestablish a new charter known as the Second Bank of the United States.
Oh, that's correct.
And who killed it?
General Andrew Jackson, the victor of the Battle of New Orleans. He put on his tombstone that he killed the bank.
That was his greatest
yes.
greatest accomplishment. I killed the banks.
Because he realized what a danger it was, and he never regretted what he had done.
He was part of that Jeffersonian crowd. Jefferson and Madison and Jackson, a whole group of men, hated the banks and what they stood for.
They did. They never lost an opportunity to fight them.
But Andrew Jackson's the only one that ever killed the banks.
Oh, yes.
But it wasn't a mortal wound because they came back shortly after, didn't they? Well, not shortly after.
Well, they came back.
Within less than 100 years.
Because the banks were not wounded. And if you don't bring them down, they will kill you.
They came back in 1913 by name, but they still controlled this country, even in establishing the other presidents.
Oh, yes. In 1913, they finally attained their objective, and they put their program across. And that is the subject of my talk today, because the Kabbalah created the Federal Reserve System in 1913, and without the knowledge of the American people, and the people did not know what the Federal Reserve System was.
And that was really the third bank of the United States.
Yes, third bank of the United States. But in all these years, they were fighting to get the bank. 100 years campaign, the American people were never informed what the real issue was and how they should fight it.
Was Abraham Lincoln one of their puppets?
Abraham Lincoln was invented for the American people as with the title of a great emancipator, although Lincoln never owned a slave and never freed one. But he became known as the great emancipator, which ended slavery in the United States.
What was his rise to fame and to the presidency? Was he a great man early on, wise and great man?
He was a small-time country lawyer who was very active, and he was a conspirator. he was constantly launching new conspiracies. And finally, the most devastating of those conspiracies was the Civil War.
But how did he get in the White House to be able to start the Civil War?
He got the Rothschilds to advance him $1 million from the Illinois Central Railroad, because the Rothschild family owned and operated the Illinois Central Railroad.
And so the Illinois Central Railroad put up $1 million to get Abraham Lincoln elected.
Yeah. So Abraham Lincoln came out of nowhere and started the Civil War. And he started by attacking the Confederate States. And so once he launched this war, it gained its own momentum. And that war is still going on today, because the southern states of the United States are still under military occupation since 1865. And the people in those southern states have no representation whatsoever in this country.
Along with George Washington, Abraham Lincoln is probably considered the greatest American hero. Was he truly an American hero, or did somebody else set him up as that?
Well, you see the beautiful building in Washington, D.C. on the Potomac, which supposedly was to do honor to these people. But Abraham Lincoln is the recipient of that attention, and he did nothing to deserve that honor except almost totally wreck this country halfway through its origin.
We've just watched you and I just watched several times a DVD on DC sorceries that Pastor Peters gave us. Does that fit in with the Kabbalah as you've taught it for the last 60 years?
Pastor Peters' expose of this operation tells the whole story of the Kabbalah in the United States to the present day.
You've been teaching this all these years. When you saw that DVD, that was the clearest that it had ever been, didn't it?
It was, because it exposed all the sorcery and necromancy and conspiracy behind the Federal Reserve Act. This came to me as a great revelation, because I realized that Pastor Peters had stumbled on the entire conspiracy, and that nothing except criminal conspiracy could be behind the sword.
So as we come forward from Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War, you mentioned that the South is still an invaded was an invaded nation, right? There were two nations in the United States.
Yes, and only none of the southern states has any representation in the United States today.
So the South is still an occupied nation.
Occupied 100%. Just like we're still occupying Germany and Japan when the World War II ended in 1945. Because the American people have never been given any explanation as to why these wars are going on. And they're going on because the Kabbalah is back in there. They're stirring them up all the time and getting the American people to keep fighting these wars. And we haven't had a shot fired against us for any of these countries all this time that these wars have been going on.
So we actually are a police state.
Oh, yes.
A policed state.
We're carrying out the police activities of the United Nations under Alger Hiss, and there's no political explanation which can justify any of these political police actions of the United Nations.
Before you leave Abraham Lincoln, whether he had a whatever his attitude was or reasons for doing it, it seemed like he turned against his handlers there at the end in printing the greenback dollars.
Oh, yes.
And what did they do to him?
They promptly assassinated him because the bankers have a complete remedy. When you oppose them, they have you killed.
How many greenback dollars did he have printed?
100 million.
Was it 400 million?
Yes.
400 million. So then as we progress on down through the 19th century, the bankers were again needing to make some money and have a war. They had planned a war in Europe, is that correct?
Yes, indeed. Since 1885. But the Rothschilds had impoverished every country in Europe, and no nation could afford to fight a war at that time.
Their idea is to turn all nations into third world nations, which makes them easily controlled.
Yes, and that's why they found that they were at an impasse, because how could you have a war when no one has any money to fight the war?
Was France the greatest nation?
In 1400 it was.
In the 1400s,
oh, yes.
And up through the time that the British Empire the Spanish Empire took over and then the British Empire. But how did they destroy France?
They destroyed France by internal revolution.
The revolution of 1789.
In 1789, the revolution killed most of the Catholic priests and nuns in the entire city of France.
And the Spanish Civil War, they destroyed Spain the same way?
There again, the principal victims were nuns and priests.
And they did Russia the same way. Russia was at one time during the 17 and 18th century were the breadbasket of all of Europe. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. It grew the wheat. It fed all of Europe.
The white Israelite race of people in Russia and Poland in that area, they were the farmers.
Yes, they were. They produced the wheat that fed the entire continent of Europe.
So the Bolshevik Revolution of 1905 to 1917, or through 1918, murdered how many white farmers in Russia?
10 million. And these 10 million so-called peasants or farmers produced all the wheat for Europe. So it was a great setback to that continent.
And from 1917 till 1919 to 89, 70 years?
Yes.
You said there was an average of 1 million per year?
That's
true. That 70 million people?
Yes. From 1917 to 1989, there was no war going on, but there was famine in those countries because they weren't producing any food.
So they made third world nations out of each of those nations.
Absolutely.
They were great and prosperous nations, and the Kabbalah made third world nations from them.
Well, the first victims of the Kabbalah were the German people themselves, because the German people were sent to the United States to fight the American people and bring them back into the fold of the British Empire. And so King George III was paid $20 million to hire the Hessians to fight the American people.
He was paid that by whom?
The Elector of Hesse, the political director of that part of Germany.
So the Kabbalah paid him $20 million?
$20 million.
And he used that to hire the Hessians to fight us in our Revolutionary War?
That's correct. as if we'd been fighting the same influence throughout our history.
So by 1885, they were needing more money. They were needing another war to fill their coffers.
They needed fresh money, and there wasn't any more money.
Every nation in Europe was broke.
Absolutely exhausted.
So they needed to turn to who?
To the American people.
To the American people. Is that why they had to get the Federal Reserve established?
Oh, yes. That was completely why the Federal Reserve was established. And the Federal Reserve was established only after 100 years of continual conspiracy here in the United States.
But they got William McKinley elected in 1896 to establish the Federal Reserve.
Yes, and he failed to do that, and they assassinated him.
But before they assassinated him, didn't they get their choice elected? His vice president wasn't the vice president of his second term, was it?
No, he was not. William Howard Taft had been running against Woodrow Wilson.
No, this was McKinley. McKinley. McKinley was their supposed man, and he turned against them. So they made him take another candidate. That was Teddy Roosevelt, correct?
That was Theodore Roosevelt.
So he signed his own death warrant when he took Teddy Roosevelt. They had to get Teddy Roosevelt as vice president before they could assassinate William McKinley.
Yes, but Teddy Roosevelt wasn't even running as a Republican. He was running as a candidate of the Bull Moose Party.
That was for his third term.
Yes.
But they got him elected, and he didn't get the Federal Reserve established in his two terms.
No. But Woodrow Wilson was still waiting in the wings to be able to become president in 1912.
But he wasn't elected president, was he?
He wasn't elected, and he could not sign the Federal Reserve Act into law.
Who was elected in 1912?
Actually, it was the Republican candidate, William Howard Taft, was reelected to the presidency, which meant that Woodrow Wilson could not sign the Federal Reserve Act into law. So it looked like all of their plans were going up in smoke, but they fell back on the Kabbalah as their final support, and the Kabbalah simply threw out Taft's election.
So William Howard Taft was actually legally reelected. He was the president from 1909 to 1912.
Yes, he was
there. So in 1913. So in 1912, he was reelected by the people.
By the people. And
but that was not recognized by the Kabbalah.
The Kabbalah refused to recognize that, and they would not acknowledge that he was actually president.
So they shoehorned in Woodrow Wilson.
Oh, yes.
And how did they appease William Howard Taft?
Well, since they had won a legal election, they couldn't deny him the presidency, but they're doing it anyway, and they appeased him by naming Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States.
And how long did he serve that term?
8 years.
8 years. And that got him put aside and allowed Woodrow Wilson to take over, illegal being their term, illegally take over as President of the United States.
Yes. We had an illegal president of the United States, which we had no way of impeaching at that time. And so Woodrow Wilson signed the Federal Reserve Act into law as part of a criminal conspiracy against the entire people of the United States. And
so this was a long time coming from the time that Andy Jackson killed the banks.
And Woodrow Wilson's first act after signing the Federal Reserve Act into law on December 23rd, 1913, they didn't even have a quorum because this was on the during the Christmas recess of Congress, and they didn't have a quorum to legally adopt the bill. But then
all of Congress had gone home on their vacation.
Oh, absolutely. That was a long trip in those days, a train ride completely across the United States. And so they were in quite a quandary as to how they would make this legal election. And Woodrow Wilson decided that the best thing to do is to take us into the First World War immediately under any pretext whatsoever. And so Woodrow Wilson said that the Germans had sunk the Lusitania, and therefore we had to go to war. And that was our only reason for going into World War I.
What was their first act, though, after the Federal Reserve Act was passed?
Well, the first act of Woodrow Wilson as president was to lend the country of Great Britain $400 million in cash to start World War I.
$400 million.
$400 million.
We heard that number earlier on with in the Civil War, right?
Yes.
The 400 million greenbacks were printed?
Yes. Well, they always had some organization to put up the money for another war.
These numbers fall in line right on down through history.
Oh, they do, because
the same numbers.
That's the amount you have to start a war.
So the first act was to loan, the first loan that the Federal Reserve Bank made was to England to create to start World War I.
Yes.
That had been in the plans for at least since 1885.
And because World War I was ended too briefly because of the international flu epidemic, it killed so many of soldiers on both sides, they couldn't continue the battle.
Was that a deliberate, was the flu epidemic a deliberate ploy?
That was a deliberate ploy by the medical establishment, because the virus which caused the flu epidemic of 1918 was deliberately caused by the doctors.
And who were the guinea pigs?
The guinea pigs were the people of the world.
But they were the soldiers, weren't they?
They were the soldiers. They couldn't fight anymore. They were dying on the battlefield.
But the guinea pigs were the soldiers on both sides of the war.
Absolutely.
In Germany and the United States and Britain and France.
Yes. And these guinea pigs were the armies of the opposing nations, because they were so drastically weakened by the losses from the flu epidemic that they could no longer continue the war.
I think our time is, we've probably gone a little over our time.
Oh,
Eustace, thank you very much.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you for that.